Up they rolled to Aragi to state their cases. Warkaiti was first to arrive, a plain, querulous creature, but not quite the witch-like crone I'd been led to expect. Her handicap was that while Mastiat had a son who'd make a king some day, Warkaiti's boy had been murdered by Theodore, and though she had a grandson, he was reputed illegitimate. She'd been consorting with Menelek, king of Shoah, the despised fat boy who had once laid siege to Magdala, but lost his nerve and turned tail when it was at his mercy. Now she made a poor impression on Napier, lamenting her misfortunes, railing against Mastiat, and looking less regal by the minute. Napier asked Speedy and me aside what we thought. I said that if it came to a war, Mastiat would eat her alive, having the men, the brains, and the will. Speedy agreed, adding that Mastiat had turned up trumps against Theodore and should be recognized Queen of Gala, whoever had Magdala. So that was Warkaiti for the workhouse. When Napier asked if she couldn't be reconciled with her sister, she let out a great screeching laugh and cried that if they made peace today, Mastiat would betray her tomorrow. Word came just then that Mastiat was expected hourly, and Warkaiti was off like a rising grouse, never to be seen again. I confess I was looking forward to my Lion Queen's arrival, and she came in style, with an entourage of warriors and servants sashaying along under a great brolly borne by minions, her imposing bulk magnificent in silks of every colour, festooned with jewellery, a turban with an aigret swathing her braids, and bearing a silver-mounted sceptre. The whole staff were on hand to gape at her, and she acknowledged them with a beaming smile and queenly inclinations, head high and hand extended in regal fashion as Napier came to greet her. She was overwhelming, and for a moment I thought he'd kiss her hand, but he checked in time and gave her a stiff bow, hat in hand. He was about to present his staff when she gave a great whoop of Bashafalaka at the sight of Speedy, while I was favoured with a sleepy smile, but no sign at all of recognition. Since the last time we'd met had been at the Gallop on the floor of her dining-room, I thought her demeanour was in quite the best taste, friendly but entirely decorous. To the others she was all dignified affability, being still sober. Napier clearly was impressed, and, as Speedy remarked to me, "There's our queen of all Gala, what?" They gave her dinner, and she entranced and appalled the company by laying into the goods like a starving python. As Stanley reported, she ate like a gourmand, disposing of what came before her without regard to the horrified looks. Pudding before beef, blancmange with potatoes, emitting labial smacks like pistol cracks. She also drank like a fish, shouting with laughter, more boisterous and vulgar with every draught, and no one, even Napier, seemed to mind a bit. It may have been her exotic novelty, or her undoubted sexual attraction, or simply the good nature that shone out of her, but I think there was also a recognition that despite her gross manners, she was altogether too formidable to be overlooked. Speedy and I were the only ones present who could talk to her directly without an interpreter, and when she'd spoken with him a few minutes alone over the coffee, she beckoned me to take his place beside her. Watching her across the table during the meal, I'd been bound to wonder what she knew of the fate of Ulubar Walk, if anything, and if she might refer to it. Now she did, but in a most roundabout way, and to this day I can only guess how she came to learn what befell on that ghastly night. Perhaps some Gala escaped the massacre. I can only repeat what she said after I had filled her cup with Tej, and she had gulped it down, wiped her lips with the tail of her turban, and smiled her fat-cheeked saucy smile. "The Bashafalaka says I am to have $50,000. Yodeja's Napier, what a fine and courtly man he is, has pledged his word, but—" She pouted and took another swig. "He does not say whether I am to have Magdala." She looked a question. "If my word goes for anything, you will, but you know it's been offered to Gobezi." She giggled maliciously. "Gobezi will shudder away like a frightened bride. What, accept an amber surrounded by my warriors? He'd sweat his fat carcass to a shadow at the mere thought. No, he will refuse beyond doubt." "Then Magdala's yours, Lion Lady. There is no one else." She nodded, sipped and wiped again, and sat for a moment. Then she spoke quietly.
Ulyabawok is at peace now.